This hour, we'll take your phone calls with Dr. Edward Tick. And if you know anybody who might have PTSD, or maybe even you do, just check in with us when we come back. Welcome back, Dr. Edward Tick with us. Edward, your website, soldiersheart.net. Is that the right one we're using?
Yes, that's it. Thank you.
Okay, super. In the book, Warrior's Return, you also wrote one called War and Soul. And as you continue with the organizations and what you do, what's new, what's on the horizon for you and your wife?
Well, I'm happy to say that we are working more and more closely with our military. So since 2012, I've been working with the Army, especially the Chaplain Corps, and now I'm working with the Air Force as well, in training our chaplains and chaplain assistants to provide the full scope of religious, spiritual, and psychological services to our troops and veterans. Our public may not know this, but within the military, the chaplains are the only ones who retain confidentiality. So if a soldier, sailor, marine is having emotional or psychological trouble and they go to a behavioral health specialist, that goes into their military records. But if they speak to a chaplain, it's the only person within the military they can speak to where it doesn't go into their record. It's completely confidential. So working with our chaplains within the military and with our clergy across the nation in helping our faith communities create a safe sanctuary and programming right within the community to help veterans and their families heal, come home, carry these wounds, share them with the community. So these are some of the efforts that we're involved with in an ongoing basis with our military and across the nation with our communities to try to help our whole country become a safe haven for our veterans' return.
Edward, though we applaud our military all the time on this program, not everybody is geared to being a military person, and I don't think they should have to go in or enlist or volunteer if they don't have that makeup.
Yeah, I agree with you, and we can discuss universal service of some kind. It doesn't have to be military service, but our nation also needs to help our youth grow up. And the military used to be the way, and in traditional cultures around the way, it was the way most young men, anyway, not often young women in other cultures and pastimes, but most young men came of age, went through an initiation process, proved their manhood by becoming warriors. But those were different kinds of cultures and times, and warfare is violent and brutal, but not the same as it is today with mass technology. Our military used to screen more carefully to determine who could and who couldn't serve and what was the
right
likelihood that they had this psychological makeup to be in the military. So you're right. Everybody is not made this way. But now, with an all-volunteer force, with fewer and fewer people serving, with many people in desperate conditions, so people are going into the military not only for the idealistic purposes of serving our nation or ridding the world of evil, but many people are going because they need a job.
Yeah.
Because they're trying to get out of a more abusive situation, because they're stuck in the inner cities and there's no other way out. Because they can't possibly imagine how to afford college except with support from the military. So there are people are going into the military for non-military or non-patriotic or idealistic reasons, and they can be more vulnerable to PTSD because they're looking for something else from the military that it can't provide.
What do you think?
All that said, the military or some form of service does help grow people up.
No question about it. Gives you a maturity level, gives you a foundation. I know my 9 years in the Navy developed some skills I didn't have.
Right.
So that's for sure.
Discipline, service to the nation, thinking beyond ourselves for the benefit of all. These are important qualities that you have and many people have. Many people who have served have these qualities. And tragically, many people who didn't give some kind of service, doesn't have to be military, but some unselfish service for the greater good, Many of those people did not evolve these higher qualities that enable us to lead better lives and help each other.
Edward, our police departments have always been under stress, but more so now than ever before. Do they come down with PTSD?
Oh, I'm glad you brought them up. Yes, we should have special concern for our police departments and all first responders. Now, first of all, a very high percentage of them are veterans. In some police and fire departments, as many as 75% of the force are veterans. Now, this varies, of course, across the country, but one thing veterans look for is continuity of service. What did I learn in the military? What was my job, my roles, my responsibilities and values, and how can I apply that in the civilian workforce? Well, of course, first responder is one of the most natural ways. Our police and firemen and EMT squads are protecting us. They are the warriors on the home front. And so many vets find their ways into that service, but even those who are not veterans are much more vulnerable to PTSD because they are constantly in the, can be in the line of fire or certainly in the line of danger. And they are being exposed to horrific, violent events, sometimes caused by humans, sometimes caused by accident. But when firemen have to go into burning buildings over and over and over again,
oh my God, yeah,
and deal with the casualties that they see, the events they have, they certainly develop PTSD. And there is some attention across the country in first responder communities to support, counseling, debriefing, but there too, not enough. Not enough support, not enough recognition that these people are willingly put themselves in harm's way over and over for all of us and need and deserve extraordinary amounts of honor, gratitude, and ongoing support to be able to tolerate such work on our behalf.
Let's go to the phones now. We'll start by going to our wild card line in Long Beach, California. Anonymous is with us. Go ahead, please.
Hi, George.
Hi.
Hi, I was just telling you, it's a call screener. I received my commission in 2002.
Thank you for serving.
I was a lieutenant and eventually was promoted to captain and worked out of, you know, FOB, Badland, different places. Excuse me.
Mm-hmm.
And after a really bad firefight, I was honorably discharged in the end. After a court martial, and went back to Long Beach where I've lived my whole life, you know, out of the service. And like you were saying, your guest here said, you know, about hypervigilance, you know, driving on the freeway, the constant, you know, hypervigilance that you feel, you know, sometimes, you know,
constant.
I find myself
yeah.
literally seeking, you know, sniper nests. Or, you know,
does it sometimes come and go for you, or is it constant?
At sometimes it feels like it's constant, but you know, you always kind of feel it in the back of your head. But no, it go. You have times when you know things are, you know that you're safe, and you know that, you know. But I know other guys that it would be a constant thing.
Yeah.
It's like they could never. You know, get it out of their head, and the VA was a big problem, you know, here in Long Beach, and diagnosing me, and, you know, a lot of guys, you know, they seem to have little or no support from us.
Did they put you on medication?
At first, no, and I actually, you know, for about 3 or 4 years turned to street drugs, heroin.
Oh, geez.
You know,
so what are you doing now? How do you feel now? What are you doing?
Well, I went through treatment on my own, you know, and eventually had the VA, you know, set me up with a psychiatrist. And I've, you know, since then I'm working again. I work for a freight forwarding company.
Good for you.
Are seeming to, you know, be better. You know, I've, you know, kicked the drugs and met. You know, I really want to thank you, George, and your guests here for putting, you know, like a face to this tonight, you know, and getting this, you know, all of this out.
Well, thank you for toughing this out. I know it's not easy for you.
Yeah, and then, you know, for all the guys out there that are, you know, thinking about committing suicide, I really want to, you know, have you guys, you know, I appreciate that, you know, you're putting, you know, putting this out there, because there's so many guys that are just at the end of the rope, you know, and, you know.
No, you're right. Let's get Edward to react to some of this. Go ahead, yeah. Edward.
I'm with you, George. Thank you very much for serving, for the sacrifices you've been through. Welcome home. And for your courage to tell your story right here now on this important day. More than anything George or I have said, your story and your courage to come on the air and say, I want to help all my brothers and sisters. I want to help all the veterans who are out there. And by telling my story and reminding people that we're hurting, but we can get through this, and to endure and find help and don't give up is of utmost importance.
Edward, no one, I did not see combat in my 9 years with the Navy at all, and I keep stressing that. No phony helicopter rides for me. But nobody can understand what they went through when you may hit a landmine at any moment, or a sniper shoots at you from afar, or you see death of children and women. Nobody can understand what they went through.
That's accurate, and at the same time, that doesn't mean we should feel unworthy of listening to and helping our veterans. There was an op-ed column in the New York Times about 2 or 3 months ago by one of our recent combat veterans who said, America, please listen to us. If you tell us you don't understand and turn off your listening, you're going to abandon us even more. This combat veteran said, I was never raped, so I can't really understand a rape survivor's experience, but because of my own pain and suffering, I do understand what it is to be traumatized, and I can extend myself through empathy to really listen and care about the other person. So it is of utmost importance that we understand just what you said. Combat is horrible beyond description, and nobody's prepared for it. People, our military is heavily and profoundly trained, and yet combat is always, always a horrendous shock that changes us immediately and forever. And our veterans do want us to understand, do want us to listen, do want to reconcile with the civilian population they served. So we must maintain utmost humility and open-heartedness. I didn't serve. I wasn't in the military. I've been in violent situations, but you're right. It's not the same. It's never the same as combat. And I've had to just do this, to extend my heart, my spirit, my mind as much as possible, to stay humble and do the healing walk with our veterans. And I consider our veterans my teachers. They taught me all that I know. They taught me what it's really like. We can learn and join with them.
Let's go to our first-time caller, Jenny in Ohio. Hi, Jenny. Good morning.
Hello, George and Ed.
Hi.
Pleasure to speak to you, gentlemen. My son was brutalized horribly in the Marines. He didn't even make it out of state. I spoke to chaplains in Quantico. I wish I had saved the pictures of his bruises on my phone, but I didn't. He got out kind of on a psych thing. I'm really not sure. I was the one that turned him in. When you have the newbies, they will go, okay, you got about 30 days, then we're going to get ugly, and then you're going to be a deserter. If my son had been a deserter, he would not have even been able to get a job at a McDonald's. He does not speak to me anymore. I understand the whole post-traumatic, and truly, boys, when you get divorced, and the whole world spins on you and you have no financial resources and everything else, it's pretty much the same. Mm-hmm. But my whole problem, and I do respect your previous caller's thoughts, his emotions, and everything that happened. Do you know how many of these young boys that go in to the military, and they're like, okay, we can do this.
Yeah.
You know, we're
can't.
Possible. Right? Okay. My son now is doing drugs. I'm just going to do it. I'm going to blame it on the situation. Everything that happened, the military promised this and this and this. He was beat to hell.
All right, so what does she do, Edward? Where does she go for help?
Well, first of all, I want to thank you, too, as a mother, for calling in, telling your story, and reminding us how many family members are suffering and that the PTSD wound goes through the entire family and community. It's not just the individual. Secondly, you said you're the one who, quote, turned your son in. It is also common that family members see the changes first. Family members see how much it's disturbing the veteran and the entire family system. And when for the vets, they're behaving normally as they did in the combat zone. They don't know how differently they're acting and feeling. And so it takes a family member to challenge them and bring them in for a counseling or other kind of help. And this mother did that. I'm sorry this family is suffering, but mom had the courage to say something's wrong here. Also, she is also correctly making the point that today American military training is so intensive and so severe that some people, as you said, George, everybody's not fit for service.
No.
And so some people really do break down and get PTSD just from basic training and never get out of the country.
What's the percent of people, of soldiers who go in? 1%, 10%, what that come down with PTSD?
Well, I don't know of the ones who go into the service, so we don't have accurate statistics on that. What we do know is how many break down with PTSD after being deployed. And the numbers on that are that 20% of the active duty
20%.
Service people,
wow.
20%. That's and 40% of the National Guard and reservists.
That's high. Ed, we're going to come back with final calls in a moment here on Coast to Coast AM. On our next Coast to Coast program, of course, investigative reporter Linda Moulton Howe joins us with some incredible stories. So make sure you're part of that show. And welcome back with our final segment with Dr. Edward Tick as we talk about Warrior's Return, Restoring the Soul After War. And let's go right to the calls. Mark in Ventura, California. Thanks for holding, Mark. Go ahead.
Oh, not a problem. There's important information for vets out there with PTSD. It's estimated there are 80,000 vets with PTSD that have less than honorable discharge, not bad conduct, not dishonorable, usually an undesirable,
mm-hmm.
but it could be dishonorable or something. In last September, Defense Secretary Chuck Hagel made it possible for these guys to upgrade their discharge based upon the PTSD and therefore qualify for the VA benefits like hospital or medical, which is kind of an ironic catch-22. They have PTSD after several years of good service, honorable in the military, honorable combat service, and they hit a brick wall and they just snap. One time, they get booted out with an undesirable and they lose all their benefits, everything. They can't go to the VA and get the medical treatment for their PTSD. So it's getting rid of that catch-22 finally after, 40 years. And that's very important. I wish the media would push that out to the vets and let them at least know that this exists now.
What do you think of that, Edward?
Yes, and thank you for reminding our audience of this opportunity. There are many people with less than honorable discharges who, as Mark said correctly, who did run into some small amount of trouble in the military and were released without that full honorable discharge and without their PTSD being recognized. So for our military people who are being released, and for many veterans in the civilian sector now, appealing their rating, it's not only for the people who are discharged, also we have many, many veterans in legal trouble in the prison population. There too, veterans are in 2 to 3 times their the proportion as civilians, and they many of them have PTSD that's either undiagnosed or has not been permitted as evidence into their court proceedings. The more we realize how prevalent PTSD is and publicize it and get our good veterans the support they deserve, the more we can clean up this issue. So thank you to Mark, our caller, for reminding us there is some hope and some change in the policies. And our vets who don't have a satisfactory classification really should make the efforts to be reexamined and reclassified and fight for their benefits and their rating.
And again, applauding you, Edward, for the work that you do. And tell us a little bit about Kate, your wife, and her involvement in the project.
Yes, thank you. My wife's name is Kate Dahlstedt, and she and I co-founded our nonprofit organization, Soldiers Heart Together, in 2006. I've been working with veterans, as we said, for 38 years. Kate is also a psychotherapist and has been working with veterans and their families for over 20 years. Kate specializes in working with women veterans who have special challenges and problems today, especially as they are deployed into the combat zone and military sexual trauma is so high. About 33% of our service women and 25% of our service men experience some form of sexual trauma in the military. So Kate specializes in that and working with our women veterans and also with women family members. We had a mother call in a few minutes ago, and we don't realize but must realize how profoundly affected the families are. It's not just the vets who get PTSD, but when one person has it, the entire family system is affected. So Kate specializes in working with mothers, sisters, daughters, siblings of the military, and looking at and working to heal the impact on the families.
You've got it all covered, Ed.
We're trying.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Let's go to...
We're trying, and we always were staying devoted. We also have a chaplain on our staff who did serve in Afghanistan. So we work extensively with faith communities and faith organizations across the country, helping them set up ministries for veterans right out of their church or synagogue or mosque. We are trying to cover it all, recognizing the full scope of the impact of military service and so many wars on our country. We don't want to let anybody fall through the cracks.
I got a lot of emails during the break, and one person asked, is a bad relationship a cause for PTSD? That is stressful to some people.
Yes, it's stressful, and it depends. Also depends how bad the relationship is. Surely some dimensions of, well, if there's violence, if there's domestic
violence
in the relationship,
sure.
Of course, if there's sexual abuse in the relationship. But beyond that, if there is significant betrayal of trust, you don't have to hit somebody or physically hurt somebody to cause such deep emotional and spiritual damage that PTSD results. So watch out for betrayal, for lies, for the acting out in some way out of the house, for a repeated pattern of abusive or disappointing or betraying relationships that might indicate that you have PTSD that comes from intimacy wounds.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Mayat now in the city of New York. Mayat, hi there.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi.
I have a two-parter, and I'll ask, and then I'll listen over the air. First, I'd like Edward's take on this REM, Rapid Eye Movement, which Coast over the years has had at least one or two guests on that said that this is some good remedy for PTSD. And then the second part of my question is more complex because it involves me feeling traumatized. And hearing a report this morning on Pacifica WBAI New York, the morning show, where Edward Steven Janis, who I think is with the Real News Network, he was talking about, and this is an important piece, because as I see the city blow up in Baltimore, I mean, I feel traumatized by that myself.
Oh, you had 60 arrests in New York tonight.
Yes, and what I'm saying is he documented that there's been a pattern with a certain Mayor O'Malley in 2006, for years, 100,000 people being incarcerated, basically because it generates overtime for police and not supposed to have quotas. And, of course, the blacks are vulnerable because already the mass incarceration under the war on drugs, where they're the ones targeted and the whole prison system is built around them. And he talked about the casinos and the projects, hotels downtown, where they're basically a poor community subsidizing that, and the basketball court hasn't been fixed for 17 years. And I heard people actually say that they're afraid to walk around in their community. They're not allowed to be on the stoop, and they fear being shot or being crushed. Yeah. And, of course, my heart fails when I see that, obviously, because the lie also causes the burning and the blow-up. When I see Freddie Gray literally, his spine, his neck was crushed, was broken when he was dragged to the van. So my question is me dealing with all this trauma and the fact that we really don't have a good dialogue. George, I love you, but you need to bring on somebody. We have generations of scholars. We need people because it's two different realities. We need blacks who know the culture, know the community, lived in the community. I didn't feel John even knew any black people, and he certainly didn't read that Department of Justice report on Ferguson. So my question is a psychic wound, because we don't have the talk between us. There's a divide and conquer. And how those of us who are watching it feel also deeply traumatized. If you understand my question, I'll listen over the air.
Okay. And, well, John did read that Ferguson report issued by the Justice Department. He just didn't agree with how it was interpreted at all. Back to Freddie Gray for a moment. Tonight, apparently a witness, another person who was in the van, claims that Freddie was smashing himself in the van. It's weird. I mean, no question about it. When he was put in the police van, the other one, he was hurt. He was in pain. So however they got him to that, something happened. But go ahead, Edward.
Yeah, well, thank you. Again, thanks for your call, Mayap. And regarding your first question about rapid eye movement therapy, yes,
REM.
That is one of the techniques that has been found to be most effective without medications for reducing PTSD symptoms. There are several like that that are non-medication and holistically oriented therapies. So rapid eye movement is desensitization is one. Mindfulness meditation is being used extensively for veterans and in the military, and that is also extremely helpful for staying in the present moment, not floating back to the past, but restoring serenity and a sense of being in the present, not dragged back to the war. There's others. There's equine therapy. There, the use of horses. There's service dogs, and veterans are working with traumatized animals and healing each other. So our caller is right. There are several comprehensive and holistic therapies that can be very helpful, and people should look for those too, not just rely on medications and not just wait for the VA. If they find they can't get an appointment, find a private practitioner. Come to my organization, Soldier's Heart, runs regular retreats all over the country. Come to one of our retreats or other retreats. There are a lot of comprehensive and holistic veteran services that can help a lot. People shouldn't just wait for the
public and government-sponsored form of service.
Let's go to Stephen in Xenia, Ohio, east of the Rockies. Stephen, good morning. Go ahead, sir.
Good morning. I got a question. My son, when he was 7 years old, witnessed a shooting. His mother's boyfriend basically pulled out a gun, said, "You want to see something," and shot himself.
Accidentally or suicide?
Suicide.
Oh, my God.
Suicide in front of the young child.
Jeez. Yeah.
In front of him, yeah.
Horrible.
And the guy lived. So he, like, pulled the gun forward at the last minute, and he shot through the frontal lobe. So long story short, I get custody of my three children. Put him into counseling because I had found out she hadn't had him in counseling. This guy had lived. She moved him back in. Really stressed out my son. I get him into counseling and everything, and he gets diagnosed with PTSD.
Yeah.
So we get through, we're doing the counseling and doing everything. You know, it's been 3 or 4 years now, coming up on 4 years, and he started getting a lot better. But they kept switching counselors on him, and he kind of dropped out and couldn't, he's not, I don't know, not communicating very well, and seems to shut himself in. And I'm wanting to know, is there anything I can do at home to try to, I don't know, boost his morale or bring him out of it?
Okay. What's he do, Edward? Only have a couple minutes left.
Yeah, first of all, don't give up on him. And secondly, and thanks for calling in. And everybody should recognize that it is very possible for children to develop PTSD from early traumatic events. Also, the younger person develops PTSD. If they, the sooner we get treatment, the better. And that's universal for all traumatic experiences. So if you think your child is suffering from any kind of trauma, don't ignore it. Don't hope it'll go away. Get them help. And stay in counseling. Our callers also write that it's more difficult if counselors and therapists are changed. People need long, secure relationships. So, Dad, as a father caring for your son, giving as much reassurance and safety and joy in the present and reminding your son that you are giving him a safe and stable and consistent home. You're not going to turn him away. Even though counselors are changing, Dad isn't changing, and you are there for him. Over time, that will reassure him and give him the help he needs. But don't ignore his suffering and symptoms, and do try to find a counselor he really likes and can relate to who won't leave.
He sounds like that he's on top of this, the father.
Yeah, he sure does. And he's responding to the family situation, saying his son's pain is the most important thing, and he's going to address it. And that's what every trauma survivor needs.
Edward, would you give out your website, sir, to everybody?
Sure. Thank you. My website is soldiersheart.net. Soldiersheart.net. All my information about books and events are on my website. My new book, Warriors Return, is being offered for free in the ebook version all this week, and along with the 40th anniversary of the end of the war, we want as many veterans and family members to have it as possible. So you can go to Kindle or any other ebook server and get the book for free this week.
Edward, thank you so much for being on the program.
Very welcome. Thank you for having me and for the service you give to our entire public.
We will never stop. That I promise you. For Nathan Staton, Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean LaDesor, Stephanie Smith, Chris Borelson, George Knapp, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. I'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.